This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. The recent polar vortex offered a surprise in Michigan. We were all asked to lower our thermostats because a fire at a natural gas compression station caused problems. It revealed some weaknesses in our natural gas distribution system. Well, that cold snap also gave an energy consultant firm a unique opportunity to study the demand for electricity in detail. The study from Wood Mackenzie is titled Performance Review, Nuclear, Fossil Fuels, and Renewables During the 2019 Polar Vortex. Wade Schauer is a co-author of that report, and he joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lester.
So when you reviewed power demand, what were you looking for?
Well, we were looking to see how different generating technologies perform during this recent cold snap. We would like to, you know, better understand if these things were to happen in the future with different mixes of resources, you know, how would the power system perform or what kind of mitigation measures might be needed under those circumstances.
Right, because most of the utilities in the state have committed to changing their sources of fuel, greater reliance on renewable energy such as wind and solar. You looked at what might have happened if we were completely reliant on renewables. What did you find?
Well, you know, Michigan is part of the larger Mid-Continent ISO area, and what we found was that on the day where the polar vortex first hit, wind generation in MISO was doing quite well. There, you know, as you would expect, when a cold front comes through, the wind speeds are high, and as a result, wind generation was very high. But the following day, when the temperatures actually became even colder, the wind generation and the wind speeds collapsed, pretty much down to like sub 10% capacity factors. And so other resources in the northern part of MISO had to step in during those gaps. And this is not kind of unexpected. You know, you expect wind to be intermittent, but it just kind of highlights that if you were to rely more and more on that type of resource, you would have to have other alternatives to fossil fuels to back it up, whether it be some type of energy storage or importing more power from distant regions or that type of thing.
Yeah, help us understand that a little bit, because your report says any mix of wind and solar to serve the load would require long-duration storage or optimization of multiple stages of shorter duration. Does that mean batteries? Does that mean some kind of service that stores the power of energy? Like I've heard of things like if you've got a lot of sun, you could pump some water up a hill, and then at night you can use that to turn turbines when it comes back down. What kind of things are you talking about?
Yeah, so just looking at the polar vortex week alone, that you could potentially need battery energy storage that could last between 18 and 40 hours, so that if you're basically charging it with surplus wind and solar during the first part of the period and then using it for that gap of output. So there's a variety of possibilities. You know, there's existing pump storage plants like you talk about, but most of the proposed energy storage these days, like the vast majority of it, would be batteries. And typically today, you're only talking about 3 to 4 hours of duration with batteries, so it would have to be something with much longer durations once you start approaching high levels of renewables. Other possibilities that are talked about are things like converting a surplus solar and wind to hydrogen, and then using that in either in the gas network or some other way of delivering that hydrogen to power plants that would then convert it back into electricity. The last thing that a lot of people talk about is energy efficiency. You know, if everybody, you know, put in the maximum amount of insulation in their homes, if you put in, you know, the best windows and the best heat pumps and all these kind of things, you know, you could lower the energy demand a lot, not completely, but to a great extent, which would then help with the problem of what would provide those resources in the future.
Now, the idea here is eliminate fossil fuel plants, no coal, no natural gas, so there are fewer greenhouse gases being released. Nuclear, putting aside the other issues with nuclear, is also a greenhouse gas-free power source. What role did nuclear play into your calculations?
So nuclear performed extremely well during the polar vortex. There was just one plant outage in New Jersey that got a lot of press, but as the fleet as a whole in that footprint that was hit by the polar vortex was operating at about a 98% or higher capacity factor, so very good during the event. What we found is interesting is a lot of people talk about nuclear is kind of blocking renewable generation from expanding. You can make that argument in one sense, that if nuclear wasn't there, you could absorb more wind generation, for example, at times. But what we actually found was that by having nuclear in the fleet, you would obviously have less renewables that you would need to build, and you would also have less energy storage that you would need to build to store that energy.
Right, and we'd also have to have some place to put this nuclear waste that we don't have a place for. I got to ask you,
that's
you know,
because right.
Everybody is suspicious of anything that goes runs counter to what they believe. Was your study funded by any industry?
No, it was not.
So what was the intended audience for this?
Well, at Wood Mackenzie, we have a variety of clients. We have power clients that have coal assets, power clients that have nuclear, gas, wind, solar. We have kind of runs the gamut. The intention was just that with all of this talk about 100% renewable energy that has occurred in the last couple of months, we thought it would be a good idea to start thinking about what the implications of that would be in the next 10 or 20 years if that were to happen. So the best way to do that is to take actual data, which is what we did. We were using the actual hourly demand, wind, solar, coal, gas generation numbers that were coming out of these different ISOs and just looking at what would happen. And then extrapolating that is if you scaled up the wind and solar to kind of 100% levels.
Sounds like your recommendation, or if you made a recommendation, it sounds like you were looking at the big problem is we just don't have storage, and that's the next big hurdle for a renewable energy grid?
Storage is definitely a key component of what it will take. The other thing will be potentially a large amount of transmission expansion of the power grid so that you can move power from farther areas where maybe you have an oversupply of wind or solar to areas that are currently facing a deficit. But the challenge with this transmission is not necessarily the technical attribute of it. It's the fact that so many people are opposed to seeing any transmission lines near their homes and things. So we find that those kind of projects can take 10 to 20 years to build and often get derailed completely because of public opposition.
Wade Schauer is Research Director at America's Power and Renewables at Wood Mackenzie. He is co-author of the study Performance Review, Nuclear, Fossil Fuels, and Renewables During the 2019 Polar Vortex. Thanks for telling us about your report.
Oh, thank you, Lester, for having me.